The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
Hi, welcome to The Counter. Week one of the NFL season is now officially complete with the entirely insane Monday night game. Chuck, what'd you make of that Ravens Raiders fiasco there at the end?
That was like legitimately one of the funniest games that I have ever seen in my entire life. I mean, the last quarter plus overtime, I feel like both teams just like totally forgot like how to play football and like the rules of the game and what you're supposed to do. And I guess like the turning point for me, like when I just totally just lost my mind and was howling with laughter, was that Raiders drive where they had the ball on like the 1 yard line and they go like quarterback sneak, penalty, and interception. And the interception was just, it was like a once in a lifetime play, because you know, you have Willie Snead, who first of all was just wide the hell open in the end zone, or right in front of the end zone, bounces off his hands. There's a defender behind him. It hits him in the head, and then it bounces into another Ravens arms. And then like three plays later, Lamar Jackson gets sacked, had like his second or third fumble of the night, which was like kind of uncharacteristic for him too. And then I guess John Gruden must have just been fed up with how the game was going and just wanted to end, because there was like a second and nine play where they were about to kick a field goal like on second down, which is just hilarious, because if that goes wrong and you miss, the other team gets the ball. So like you could have just been handing the Ravens a chance to win the game, right, and you still have more chances to play football yourself. And then they can't find the kicker, so they get a delay of game penalty that knocks them out of field goal range. And on the very next play, Wink Martindale, the Ravens defensive coordinator, does like some Greg Williams crap and goes all out blitz and gets toasted on the back end. And I think it was Zay Jones walked in for a touchdown to end the game. So, I mean, honestly, that description doesn't even do injustice. Like, if you haven't watched it, I'm sure there's somewhere on YouTube where you can go watch the end of this game. It's one of the funniest spectacles I've ever seen on an NFL field.
It's just so bizarre, man. It's just, I mean, I fell asleep. Like, I don't know. The Ravens were just, I guess they're probably only up a touchdown, but it seemed like they would comfortably walk away with it. I just felt, you know, I think I saw Lamar that one play where he sort of drifted to his right and like eventually threw, I think, to Hollywood Brown in the back of the end zone. And like, it's just like, there's no way. How do you stop this guy? Like, there's no way to defend that. He's just going to do that three more times in the second half, and this game's going to be, you know, 35-17.
Right.
So I woke up this morning and had to try to catch up. And I was like, wait, what happened? And then what happened? And then they couldn't find the kicker. Like, I don't even like, I mean, that's like an Urban Meyer thing, man. Right. Yeah. Like you're not even.
Honestly, I just feel like if they were able to find the kicker, they probably would have lost. Like, I don't know. The way that game was going is like, no. Normal things are not going to happen, even though kicking on second down is not normal whatsoever. But it just kind of seemed like if you kick this field goal, it's not going in. But if you go second and 14, you might be able to score a touchdown, which was just one of those games. And honestly, it reminded me of JV football one time. We were playing so poorly, our coach got pissed and punted on third down.
Did it work? No. Did it send a message to you guys?
No, because we just lost the rest of the games. We all hated him after that. So, man. You know, sometimes you should treat your players like players, but yesterday wasn't that. I just think John Gruden was like, we had the most batshit crazy performance on the goal line where we can't get a quarterback sneak and then we throw an interception from like the 5 yard line. Let's just try to end this game here, but couldn't do it. And they got lucky on the next play where like another funny thing about that last play is you have Zay Jones, who like by all accounts is like has been one of the worst starting receivers in the NFL since he was drafted, just toasting Marlon Humphrey, who just signed like a 5 year, $100 million contract by the Ravens, like one of the best cornerbacks in the game. And honestly, up until that play, like he had a crazy shutdown night. Like they had him on
Darren Waller, yeah, most than a lot of the right. night, right?
Not only Darren Waller, but they had on Darren Waller, Henry Ruggs, Hunter Renfro, like three totally different players.
Different type.
And up until that point, like, I thought he had played a pretty good game. And then, you know, the football gods decided to let them fart on the field. And that last play was just like the perfect encapsulation of everything that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just takes one, right? I mean, it's just one play and there it was. We're going to go through it. We'll probably touch on this game a little bit more. I think we might talk about every single game. It's week one, right? Yeah. Like, there's valuable information from everything. We'll try not to overreact to it. Season's longer than ever before. 17 games. There's more teams making the playoffs too. It's, you know, so, like, it feels like this is just the beginning, and a lot of this, with the way teams smartly play in the preseason now, they don't really use their number one guys that much. So it feels like really we'll understand what these teams are in a week or two or three even. So we'll try not to read too much into this, but this first week. But we'll go through what we did see and break down some thoughts. We're going to start with your Forverts column, which returned last week, and then this week you've got observations coming out of the weekend. And I'm so sorry that you had to lead this thing off with the Falcons getting somehow absolutely obliterated by the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
I honestly did not see this coming.
If I could have posted like just my text and group messages from that game, like, I wouldn't be working here right now. Like, honestly, I'll say this, like, it was kind of nice because for the first time in years, I guess I felt like reinvested as a fan, because like after 28-3, like, it was so hard to just come back. Like, right. I'm just supposed to watch this, like, nothing happened. Like, we're just supposed to pretend that we're all good and we didn't just blow like the biggest Super Bowl lead in history. And also just to plug, you know, my pals over at Secret Base, if you haven't watched their Dorktown Falcons documentary, it's absolutely outstanding and hilarious. And I still haven't gotten the courage to watch the 23 episode, but maybe I'll get some drinks with me later week and do that. But, you know, just to like, to finally, I guess, get a semblance of new faces around there with Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot, I've kind of felt like, oh man, like, you know, it doesn't quite feel like the same operation, even though we still got Matt Ryan here. There's like, I think there's only three or four players left on the team from that Super Bowl. So I kind of felt like, even though I totally felt, and I've written about how they completely wasted the offseason, I was kind of ready to get back and watch them. And they just got absolutely dominated, and not just like in a way where,
no,
when you look at the score and it's just like, oh, but I mean, 32-6 to a team we thought wasn't any very good, like, that stinks. Like, blowouts happened. But the way that they lost, it was just a physical beatdown. And you have Arthur Smith all offseason talking about the value of toughness and, you know, we're not going to do these slogans and taking shots at Dan Quinn for how he was running the team. And then you come out and it's just like the same soft stuff, and it's like it looked like the Eagles games that we've seen recently between the Falcons and the Eagles, where you kind of see the value of trench play, and one team has Lane Johnson and Jordan Mailata who combined for like 700 pounds, and you have Jason Kelsey on the interior, and then one team is starting a third round rookie at left guard who had a 1.4 pass blocking grade from PFF. And honestly, when I looked at the charted stats that they have for Jalen Mayfield, I think it was like 8 pressures on 41 snaps. When I went back and watched the game, honestly, I thought that was kind of generous.
More than that.
To not punish him further with already such an insanely bad stat line. I mean, it was just like, it made me furious, obviously, because I was like, all right, I'm ready to get kind of invested again. And then they just come out and do that stinker. And also because I wasn't very high on Nick Sirianni coming out. So them to just get demolished like that, it was just all bad. And I sent a text to my buddy during the game when, you know, Kyle Pitts is out there just fighting for his life, like trying to get something thrown his way while Matt Ryan is running away and getting clobbered by Eagles defenders. Like, don't you think Kyle Pitts wishes he was back in Gainesville right now? Like, during that game, do you think that there was any point where Kyle Pitts was like, you know, I'll take that whatever booster money I was getting from the guys that paid up over this NFL salary right now.
I mean, I feel like we owe Nick Sirianni, who knows how it's actually going to play out, but I
was wrong yet because I think the takeaway from that game is, and we can get to it later when we talk about some performances, but I just don't think that it's you can really take anything away from what the Falcons put together because they were just so, or what the Eagles put together because they were just so outmatched. I guess the thing that if you're a Nick Sirianni fan, the offense looked like well put together in terms of how he was.
I thought they, I mean, they asked Jalen Hurts to do what Jalen Hurts can do, right? Like, I don't know. You know, he was not throwing a lot of deep passes. I mean, I think he had, you know, that it was a lot more dump offs and they were just sort of keeping it simple for him. And it's interesting to think about what the Eagles offense looked like last year. And we're going to talk about Carson Wentz when we get to the Colts game, but you know, Wentz sort of like refused to do simple things. Carson Wentz, the reason he is so bad as a quarterback is that he tries to make things happen. And Hurts just did not, like, he sort of had a game plan in front of him and he just did it. His average pass traveled, I think, like 3.5 yards past the line of scrimmage. Yeah. I think that was the least of any quarterback. So it was just sort of a game plan that he could operate. Obviously having Devonta Smith was like a huge game changer for the Eagles to just have a real wide receiver. And like you said, you know, the offensive line, both lines were much better than Atlanta. So, yeah, I don't know, you know, who knows how it'll play out. And I think Arthur Smith's going to figure it out. But like this was his wake up call that he doesn't have Derrick Henry. It's just not going to work the same way. Like how he didn't get Pitts more involved though is like, I don't know, man. You got to get the ball in his hands, right?
And gotta find a way. Ridley too. Like the first drive or maybe the first two drives, like I was like, okay,
right.
Calvin Ridley's getting 200 targets this year, which, hey, I'm fine with that plan. That's a fun plan that can get you on the board and score some points. But after like that first couple of drives, like it almost felt like Arthur Smith thought that he was coordinating the Tennessee offense where, you know, they were running a lot of I formation. Their fullback, Keith Smith, he played 20 snaps out of like 70. And that's like you really only want to reserve those workloads for like the top tier fullbacks, like, you know, Kyle Juszczyk or Patrick DeMarco in his prime, like guys like that. Those are the guys that you want on the field. As often as Keith Smith was getting put out there, and they just kept running, like, you know, between the tackle stuff and just getting absolutely battered and sledgehammered. And, you know, like, I don't even know if there's much that you can take away from Mike Davis's performance because, you know, 3.3 yards per carry isn't good, but I just don't think that most of that was his fault. And I thought that the times when he had just enough space to get past the line of scrimmage, he looked pretty good, but, you know, the Falcons, they gave up 6 tackles for loss on, 24 non-Matt Ryan carries. So it's just a very, very bad spot for them to be in. And, you know, I just don't really see how it gets that much better because you wasted the offseason. You don't have a lot of cash for next year, too. So you're just going to have to sit here what you have and be upset at yourself. And I'm transitioning my fandom to NFL Red Zone for the rest of the year after the summer.
we talked, you wrote at length about this, that if the Falcons weren't going to use a pick, you know, they had the number 4 pick, right? If they weren't going to use that on a quarterback, then, you know, what you're signaling is like, hey, we're all in for this year. We're going to make it work. And then they get rid of Julio Jones and, you know, this team clearly is not, I don't know, as again, it's week one, but just doesn't seem like we're the trajectory is where you as a Falcons fan or any Falcons fan will want it to be. The Eagles, like, you know, I grew up a Philadelphia fan. I think people are excited, right? Jalen Hurts kind of looks like maybe he can be an NFL quarterback, and then the Eagles have 3 first round picks next year. The offensive line playing well with guys who will be there for a few years. I guess Kelce probably won't be, but but you know, the tackles certainly bodes well for the future. So we'll kind of see where it goes from there. Number two in the four verts, the Bears should play their best quarterback. This was a lot of buzz about this over the weekend, and just people bringing up like, oh, don't you remember that that Aaron Rodgers sat as a rookie and Tom Brady sat as a rookie? Yeah. Like these comparisons are not in any way comparable. Don't make any sense.
Yeah,
right. Like Tom Brady was a nobody. He was like fourth on the depth chart as a rookie, and Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre. Yeah.
And Mahomes was drafted by the Chiefs. And at the time, like Alex Smith, he like just led the NFL in passer rating. Like, you know, like there's, right. I think that's something that gets forgot when you talk about Mahomes sitting. It's like Alex Smith was a really good starter for the Chiefs. Like at the time that Mahomes joined the team, like you said, Aaron Rodgers sitting behind goddamn Brett Favre, and Drew Bledsoe wasn't a slouch either.
And Mahomes, like, you know, we made fun of Steven all the time for his Patrick Mahomes scouting report and saying like, this guy's pretty raw. I don't like, maybe he was a little raw. Whereas like Justin Fields, you know, he is ready, dude. Like this guy is, he's really good.
He's better than Andy Dalton. And
yeah,
I just don't understand. And I guess we can kind of use this as like a Bears Rams recap, where if you're Matt Nagy, and you're looking at the other side of the field and you see what the Rams have done, where you take Jared Goff, who, you know, capable starter, you know, had some pretty nice plays, honestly, against the 49ers, just not good enough to get you over that hump. And there's like a level of physical talent that can help you get over the next level. Like that's why Patrick Mahomes was eventually brought in over Alex Smith, even though Alex Smith was a capable starter. There's just something that having that, you know, four whatever speed, being able to throw the ball over the moon, like that just unlocks a different part of your offense. And, you know, I just don't think that the Bears are reasonably at a point where they can look at themselves and say, Andy Dalton is going to save our jobs. Because why would he? Like, he's just not that guy. Right. And, you know, he's had some solid years in the past, but last year, you kind of start to see the decline of Andy Dalton, what that looks like. I mean, it's not like he was playing with a bunch of scrubs in Dallas last year. Like, they still had their receivers and running back out there for most of the year. And it looked like Andy Dalton. So if you're Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, and you're trying to come up with a way to save your job, I guess there's just a disconnect from me to, you know, what other people are saying, where it's like, keeping Andy Dalton on the field will allow them to prolong their job security. Because to me, every day that you don't play your best quarterback shows a level of incompetence. And I just don't know why they are unwilling to just go full and commit on this, because they clearly believe in his talent, because one, they traded for him. They traded up for him in the first round to get him. And two, when they need a play at the goal line, they're not going to Andy Dalton. They're going to Justin Fields. When they get close to the goal line, they're going to what they deem to be the better option in that situation. And I just want to be like, hey, open your eyes up. Like, that can be the better situation for you all across the field. And it's not to say that, you know, Justin Fields is a guaranteed Pro Bowl or Hall of Famer than that, but I'm willing to bet he's better than Andy Dalton. And I don't think that that's such an outlandish thing for the Bears to believe in.
Right. And what's your end game with Andy Dalton? Like, Matt Nagy this is his fourth season. In the previous three, they've made it to the wild card game twice and lost. And like, that's your ceiling. Like, that is Andy Dalton, right? Like, that's who he is as a player. Like, he's a wild card loss. Like that's just your ceiling with Andy Dalton playing quarterback. Like, why not let Justin Fields learn and see where you're going to get? You know, it's a long season. You get him snaps now. Like you said, like if you're comfortable using him in pressure situations, in the toughest place to play, right? Like, the red zone is the toughest place for a quarterback to make a play, either running or throwing. And you're comfortable using him there. Like, it's just time, man. Just
put him in. Put him in. Because what's the worst that can happen? He, like, the thing that is, another thing is with Andy Dalton, let's just say that he repeats, like, whatever, 5.8 yards per attempt for the whole season, or 5.4, excuse me. Like, that's the worst quarterback in the league. Like, you had a performance that statistically it's going to end you up with a first overall pick. So, like, that's not good enough to save your job. Clearly, you believe in Fields' talent. So let's get this thing going. You saw on the other side of the field, when you have a quarterback who can physically make plays that your other guy could not, it just opened things up for you in a way that it would be really beneficial for the Bears to have on the field. And I just think that until they do that, they're just kind of wasting everyone's time, including their own. And I think if you're not going to make that switch to Justin Fields, I don't know why that there's – I just don't know why they're still there.
Right. Totally agree. All right, let's go to the third point in Forverts. And this is one that a situation that you're pretty close to. The Giants need to look in the mirror. This franchise feels like it is destined for like a complete rebuild, like general manager, coach, quarterback, like just wipe everything out, because whatever they're trying to do right now, this is not it.
It's baffling. Like I won't say it's baffling, because I really don't think anyone believes in the decision makers over there. So like them getting to this point is not the baffling thing. It's just, you have allocated so much money and so many draft picks into this team, and you're still not any good. Like, you've missed on the Andrew Thomas pick, probably. And if you didn't miss on him, you missed on Mekhi Becton, Jedrick Wills, and Tristan Wirfs, who all appear to be a good deal better than Andrew Thomas and are headed for like legit star tackle, like guys that you think about and we don't ever think about offensive linemen. Like, that's, I think that's where those guys are headed. We'll see what happens with Becton after this injury, but still. You don't have the quarterback. You spent the 6th overall pick on a guy who was like the 4th or 5th best quarterback in the ACC that year. statistically, like, not even one of the most impressive ACC quarterbacks. Like, I don't know what you're seeing to make your bets there, but yeah. And the defense is good, I think, and I think they'll play a lot better throughout the season because they have talent on the back end. And Patrick Graham is a really good defensive coordinator, and he's going to show a lot of looks that confuse offenses. But we've seen in this league that, you know, relying on your defense is not like a sustainable strategy from year to year. And it's not like they have overwhelming talent in the front seven where this is going to be like,
right. They got no pressure on. I thought Teddy Bridgewater looked, I do want to mention that. I thought he looked much more athletic, much more comfortable than he has in recent years. And he was throwing the ball to different parts of the field. It was a much different Teddy Bridgewater than I expected to see, a much more dynamic player, but he's still not, you know, he's not Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. He's not Lamar Jackson. Like, he's a guy that they should have brought down probably a couple times, and they just had no push.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just, the, like you said, the front seven did nothing. So, just not a lot to get excited about.
There's almost nothing to get excited about. Like, if you're backtracking and looking at things that these guys have said throughout the offseason, you know, in a commitment to Daniel Jones in a class where, you know, shoot, Mac Jones looks better than Daniel Jones does. And you're sitting there before the draft. No, Daniel Jones is our guy. Well, why? Why are you making that commitment? Like, why are you closing yourself off from better options? Or why are you bringing back Nate Solder? Or even if you're bringing him back, why are you not letting the young guy, Matt Peart, get snaps over him at right tackle? I mean, it's just really, really bizarre decision-making. And they've thrown so many assets at this team to not really get anything back. Like, hopefully, once Saquon Barkley gets right and, starts to heal from his ACL injury and gets used to, like, the speed of the game again, maybe that's something that can change things for you. But as things stand right now, like, they really need to just, like I said, look in the mirror and get serious about their self-scouting and just thinking about what the hell are we going to do next? Because, you know, next year we have a ton of money allocated to this roster and we can't get much production out of this. It might be time for a coaching change already after 2 years. Dave Gettleman, if this is bad again, certainly will not be returning to New York. I mean, he's already on the hot seat, coming out of last season. So it's just a lot of bad vibes. And Jason Garrett, like, Dude, I don't get it. You've been around really good offenses basically your entire career in Dallas. You had Tony Romo, Dak Prescott. Scott Linehan was like a fine enough play caller for you to like get to the playoffs a couple times. And then Kellen Moore, like, he looks like one of the brighter young play callers in the league. I don't understand how your offense is this stale and this bad and just has no creativity whatsoever.
So vanilla, man.
Yeah.
It's just nothing going on. Yeah, I mean, I really feel like if you there's a couple teams this week that you watch and you're just like, whoa, they need to start over.
Yeah.
and the Giants were very high on that list. Your fourth bullet point here for the Forverts is about Chandler Jones, who probably just sacked somebody as we were talking. Had five in against the Titans. I want to break down. Tell me, you know, you say in here like I was going to try to break this down, but words don't do it justice. Watch the film, and I totally agree with that. But I wanted to ask you what. Was it just beating Taylor Lewan? Like, did he just really own Lewan at this moment? Because Lewan, like, he's not great, but he's a serviceable NFL tackle.
He was good enough to get that extension from Tennessee. So,
right.
I guess, I mean, the thing is, like, there wasn't much to say about it also because he was just, like, using the same move, like, for three and a half. Like, I'm just going to get off the snap. I'm going to run around you. I'm going to run full speed in Ryan Tannehill. And, I don't understand how maybe Lewan is still hurt or what, but you know, there was no adjustment on his part. Like, cause usually what happens is like, let's say like you're an offensive tackle and you're getting beat off the edge a lot. Like guys are just running right by you. So what you'll do like at the snap of the ball is you'll try to get out your stance faster, which, you know, it'll protect that outside edge, but might leave you open the inside moves. And then sometimes you'll see guys like they bail too hard out and they get beat with a rip move or a swim move inside and get the quarterback sacked. But this wasn't that. Like, it was just the same thing over and over again for Lewan. And then Lewan went out of the game, I think, at halftime, and some 71 came in, and there was one sack that Chandler Jones had where, I mean, it was just straight up get the hell out of my way, threw him on the ground, got a strip sack on Ryan Tannehill for his fifth sack of the game, and it was just total destruction. And, you know, I will say that the first of his five sacks, while it was definitely a great play, anytime you get a strip sack on a defensive, as a defensive player, you're feeling good. But the first play, that sack was almost all on Ryan Tannehill, because if you go back and you watch it, they're running like this play action, you know, play action stuff that we've seen the Titans run for the past, you know, two or three years, whatever. And one thing about play action is if you're going to be a team that goes hard on your play action fakes. And what I mean by that is on this play, like they don't really have anyone to hold Chandler Jones accountable on the backside of the play. Like no fullback coming out or a tight end coming out or, you know, a route coming in his area where maybe he wants to stay home and play that side of the field. You know, if you're going to go all out on your play action and just leave Chandler Jones unblocked, the quarterback
you can't roll into him then.
Well, not only that, but the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, he needs to sell the fake better. Like if you go back and watch that play, he does a quick ball fake to Derrick Henry, and he doesn't even extend the ball out far enough for it to look like Derrick Henry has the ball. Like if you can see on the broadcast angle that Ryan Tannehill clearly has the ball in his hands and never got the ball close to Derrick Henry, we know that Chandler Jones can see it as someone who's been in the NFL for, you know, a decade and has a chance to be a Hall of Famer at this point. And you just give him a free beeline to come and kill you. So Ryan Tannehill, that one's on you. The rest of it, bro, I don't know what is up with Tennessee, but you know, I guess our departed pal, Stephen Ruiz, he gets a pat on the back for that article he wrote about the Titans earlier this summer where he was just like, this team is not they're not ready for the Super Bowl talk yet. And they certainly didn't look like it on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, we had questions about Todd Downing, the new offensive coordinator, who I think he had called plays like one other time for the Raiders. Nothing impressive there, whether he could replicate what Arthur Smith did. You know, Stephen also often talked about play action as a cheat code for a quarterback. And that's really what makes Tannehill good. It's what makes Baker Mayfield good. Like, but it doesn't mean it's simple for a coach to do. Right. And I think we saw that this weekend, like, I don't know what the Titans were trying to do, but because I don't think the Cardinals have that great of a defense, right? Like, and the Titans just looked lost. How did you feel about? We also have been talking a lot about Cliff Kingsbury and whether he would catch his offense up a little bit and really use the talent of Kyler Murray. It just seems like he has been reluctant to let Murray throw the ball around. I'm not sure that he created a game plan this week. Built toward that, but Kyler Murray ended up winging the ball all around the field. Mostly, it seemed on broken plays or sort of doing his own thing. Murray was fantastic.
Yeah, he was crazy.
But I'm not sure that Kingsbury. I mean, I'm not sure that like this offense is really there yet, where it needs to be to use that talent from Murray.
Yeah, I kind of felt like it wasn't really Cliff that much. It was just. You know, Murray runs a 4-3 and can throw the ball 80 yards. And that can help you a lot. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with, the Bears conundrum with Andy Dalton and Justin Fields. I mean, when you just have a guy that can just make plays unlike anyone else in the field, it gives you a leg up. And I kind of just felt like that game was Kyler taking over. And, I don't know if it was – much more than that. You know, you had a former number one overall pick looking like a number one overall pick. And I also think that when we come back and look at some of the stuff that was said about the Titans in the preseason, I'm not sure enough was made about just how bad this defense is. Like, they weren't a good unit last year, and they didn't really add all that much. I mean, you got Bud Dupree, but, you know, I always kind of looked at him as, like, just the second guy in Pittsburgh who – mainly benefited off playing with like four other savages on the defensive line. And, you know, you got Caleb Farley, who, when I watched him on the film, like you see the athleticism and all the traits in the world, but he just kind of seemed like he was still struggling with that back injury that caused him to slide in the draft a little bit. And maybe that's something that clears up, but as things stand right now, the Titans, they don't really have a good defense. And, you know, we definitely saw that yesterday.
All right, we talked a little bit about the Raiders-Ravens game earlier, but I just wanted to know your takeaway, specifically for the Ravens. I mean, this is a team that had pretty high hopes. A lot of people think is a legit Super Bowl contender. We have questioned Greg Roman and whether he's changed his offense enough. You know, he built – I think we all agree that he built a perfect offense for Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson – first emerged as Baltimore's starting quarterback. You know, they had sort of the Flacco offense, and it was really clear that they weren't doing anything for Lamar. They came out the next season and they had developed an offense that was wholly different from most of what we see in the NFL, and it really worked. But I'm not sure that we've seen enough adjustments since then. And I think that's probably where the concern has to be for Baltimore right now. The defense, they've had a ton of injuries, you know, were decimated. I think it was the last time we were recording the show, right? That you broke in with the update that, that they had more injuries at both running back and cornerback. Yeah. They've been dealing with that. But I feel like the defense will probably be okay. You know, Wink Martindale generally figures it out, but I'm not sure about this offense, man.
The offensive line is pretty bad. Like, they're still in a spot where they're struggling. And I guess the most alarming thing to me, if I'm a Ravens fan, yesterday is that Ronnie Stanley just did not look like the Ronnie Stanley that we have been accustomed to seeing, who was, like, arguably the best left tackle in the league up until he suffered that Achilles injury last year, and he just looked super slow out of his stance. So maybe – he's playing his way back in shape, but he's not someone that usually is going to get wrecked by, you know, Yannick Ngakoue multiple times throughout the game. And Alejandro Villanueva, like, there's just no way to put it. Like, he was terrible yesterday. I guess that there's a reason why Pittsburgh didn't really feel a reason to move on from him, but they were put in a bad spot when Orlando Brown wanted out and wanted to be a left tackle to honor his dad. And, you know, I guess I respect the Ravens for honoring that request, but you left yourself in a big hole where you are relying on someone who is like an outcast from one of the worst offensive lines in the league to start for you. I thought Zeitler like had a pretty solid game, but, you know, the rest of the line, not good. And when sometimes I think when Lamar goes into, you know, Superman hero mode, he gets a little careless with the football, not in terms of interceptions, but fumbles. That was a really sloppy game from him last night. And I don't think that that's something we're going to see every night, because honestly, like outside of a few throws, I thought that he was pretty solid throwing the ball yesterday. You had the big clutch throw to Sammy Watkins late in the game, but way too many fumbles, way too much pressure allowed. I think that the offensive line is going to be a major source of issues for them all season.
Yeah. How about the Raiders? I mean, any feeling there that, I mean, it's just obviously a big game, a big home game for them. Like there was a lot of hype around it. Do you feel like this team is going to compete at all?
I'm still not convinced. I mean, Max Crosby had the game of his life, but they just kind of seem one, like a little bit too centric on Darren Waller, which is, I guess, a little alarming with the first round pick he spent on Henry Ruggs. And I know he had a big play late in the game, but you know, Darren Waller had 19 of Derek Carr's 56 pass attempts.
Oh my gosh.
Which is just unbelievable amount of, you know, production, but also just a heavy workload for, I don't know if that's something that's sustainable for him for the whole season. So I guess with the Raiders, I just kind of want to see more. We'll see what happens when Richie Incognito gets back into the lineup. But I don't feel as bad about the Raiders as I do as the Ravens, because I feel the Ravens just like very definitive flaws. Like, okay, you know, Lamar's going to have to go beast mode again. This offensive line is not very good. But with the Raiders, just like Derek Carr kind of had an up and down performance until the end of the game. And then the rest of the team is like, we'll see what happens when they're playing, you know, I guess a team that has a more standard offensive line, because you're not going to get too many matchups against Villanueva, who just like legitimately could not move at all yesterday.
Yeah. Let's jump to Kansas City, Cleveland. This is an afternoon game Sunday. Looked like it would be our first big upset of the season. And then Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill did what they do. I mean, I think that they have sort of like we joked last year all the time, right? Like that Kansas City would just toy with teams. Like they just sort of like, and then they would turn it on at some point in the game. And it felt a little bit like that's what happened here. But I think, you know, Cleveland is a legitimate team too. I mean, you know, this is, it's probably however far Baker Mayfield can carry them is how far they're going to go. But, you know, they don't have Odell Beckham yet. So, you know, there's room to grow, but it's just a good football game. And the Chiefs, you know, this is why last week when we talked about it, we said it's, you know, it's the Chiefs league and everybody else is trying to catch up with the AFC. What did you take away from this
game? Honestly, I felt better about the Browns after the game was over. Just because like the punter play, like, that's just horrible luck, and it's just not something that, you know, I know it's like the Browns are cursed or whatever, but I don't want to use that as a reason like as they can't beat the Chiefs in the future. And then honestly, the interception that Baker had to end the game, he said after the game that he was trying to throw the ball away. And honestly, after like at first I watched and I was like, dude, what are you doing? And then when he said that, I went back and watched it again. Like I'm inclined to believe him, honestly, because you know, he's running up. He's still in the pocket. Like, he hasn't broken the tackle box yet, right? So he's trying to get away from a sack. And I guess the first thing he sees is Harrison Bryant standing next to the sideline. And I'm guessing that his thought was, as he's falling down, he can get enough juice on the ball to get the ball out of bounds while also avoiding an intentional grounding penalty. But he didn't. And, you know, it was intercepted and the game was over. But as a whole, like, I feel pretty good about the Browns after that performance. To me, that was just like a heavyweight fight.
Right.
And you know, someone's got to lose. And like, if I'm a Browns fan, I'm not walking away discouraged from that game at all, because we can hang with the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's not a thing where we have the caveat, you know, but Matt Moore is in the game. No, like, we can do this against Mahomes and hopefully we get another shot at the AFC title game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a rare game where both fan bases walk away feeling pretty good. You know, like, the teams have room to grow too. The Chiefs, you know, the offensive line has been rebuilt. Like, might take a few weeks for them really to come together and gel. You know, Mahomes' weapons changed a little bit. He sort of was super. I mean, he's always going to be super reliant on Hill and Kelce, but you know, you figure that the offense will broaden a little bit as the season goes on. So there's just room for both teams to grow. Another afternoon game, this one, New Orleans Saints 38, Green Bay Packers 3. You look at this, you look at the box score here and you think that Jameis Winston is now just the most efficient quarterback in the history of the NFL. He's just out here making all the right plays, right? Like, that's who he is now.
Yeah, that was weird.
148 passing yards, 5 TDs.
Yeah, also someone looked it up and it was like the lowest passing, like the lowest number of passing yards with 5 touchdowns in NFL history. So
I'm sure.
Honestly, my biggest takeaway was this Packers defense. Like, they are dressed differently in the way that, like, their coverages are run and stuff like that. But functionally, like, they kind of got steamrolled in the same way that the other Packer team defenses have. I mean, the Saints offensive line was just totally overwhelming, not just in the run game. They had 171 yards, average 4.4 yards per carry. They allowed 0 tackles for loss, 0 sacks the entire game, which is just like, when you're in that territory where you're not allowing any negative plays in the backfield, you are like, it's really hard to lose those games. And on the flip side, I mean, Aaron Rodgers just couldn't get anything going. The Packers offense got just dominated from, you know, the start of the game to the end of the game. So it was kind of weird, like, how complete of a performance the Saints was. Like, that part was weird, definitely. But, like, the most concerning part to me, if I'm thinking about from a Packers perspective, is, like, is our front 7 good enough to get us to where we need to be? Because I don't expect Aaron Rodgers to play like that again for the rest of the season. If you're a Packers fan,
right?
Honestly, that was one of the worst games I've ever seen him play.
Right. Yeah, he was terrible. Yeah,
he was just flat out bad. And like, but if you're a Packers fan, you kind of believe that will correct itself as the season goes on. But the defensive line getting stomped by good offensive line is something that keeps happening over and over and over again.
Right. Yeah. Like, we know who Aaron Rodgers is. There's no question there. What type of player he is. He's done it so many times, but the Packers do have a new defense coordinator, Joe Barry, that they hired away from the Brandon Staley line, you know, so they're going to go with that sort of defense. Was it just a case where they're not caught up on running that defense, or what do you think? You know, you said it looked different, but the results were the same. Is there any reason that if you're a Packers fan, that you believe like the results will change over the course of the season as things go?
Yeah, I guess one thing that, you know, that Justice was telling me during the game or after the game, he was like, you got to hope that Eric Stokes can get in the lineup over Kevin King, because
yeah.
Basically, every offensive mind worth a damn, when they play the Packers, they're like, where is number 20?
Exploits.
Where is number 20? Because that's where the ball's going. If you go back and watch the NFC Championship game against the Bucks, Tom Brady, when he was dropping back the pass, where the hell is number 20? Because that's where we're going to go get our big plays. Before halftime, when they need big play, where's 20? Where's Kevin King? And it's funny, like, if you go back and just scroll through Justice's media on Twitter at Jumosq, JUMOSQ, he is, every time Kevin King makes a bad play, he tweets out the GIF from Home Alone where the mom is yelling, Kevin! So, you know, that was kind of where the Packers, I think that's something that the Packers can definitely, you know, help themselves in. And you know, you're not going to have too many games where you make zero negative plays in the backfield. But, you know, it's just alarming that when you come across one of these teams that has just a powerhouse offensive line like the Saints do, you're kind of just getting your blows thrown off every single time.
All right, let's get into I think I grouped all of these games together, the rookie quarterback games. Let's start with maybe the one who looks best, Mac Jones, in a losing effort. The Dolphins beat the Patriots 17-16. But, you know, Mac Jones looked pretty good, right? Like, looked like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Certainly not perfect by any means, but seemed to be in rhythm, seemed to make most of the right throws, seemed to get his team where it needed to go based on what he saw from the defense. Like, a ton to go off of, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked better than Tua. Right. And, you know, they both had tough tests to start the season, so I just continue to be impressed by Mac Jones, which is not something that I expected after the draft. But, you know, the universe has a weird way of working. And, you know, just like all the things you said, it's like all the things that people were saying about Mac Jones, quick delivery, get the ball out, accurate, blah, 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 blah. Like, all that stuff looks to be true. It's like the only thing that keeps you from getting really excited about him is that arm going to be good enough to really push the ball down the field? But hey, we'll see what happens. I think if you're a Patriots fan, first game, you should be pretty happy with Mac Jones playing. If you're a Dolphins fan with Tua, I know you got the win, but that was a little shaky performance.
All right. Yeah. Mac Jones finished 29 for 39, 281 yards, one TD, no interceptions, just took one sack. Like, just a really clean game from him, exactly what they need. Damian Harris rushed for exactly 100 yards. You know, like, this, it certainly looks like the Patriots are potentially back on track. You know, we'll see how it goes, especially with the Bills losing. It's going to be interesting in that division for sure. Texans Jags. Oh, what was this game, man? What even happened?
Tyrod conjured the ghost of Steve McNair somehow. I mean, which is playing out of his mind. I failed to think of a game that Tyrod has played in the NFL better than that. I mean, just evading sacks, deep balls were on point. Really just accurate to all levels of the field, thrown on the run. Like, it was just crazy. Like, I know the Jaguars are the Jaguars, but, like, when you have I'm still watching you complete these tight window throws, I have to put some credence into that, you know? Like, that was just a crazy performance. And I just don't know what to make of the Texans. Like, is this still an apocalyptically bad team, or are they just a regular bad team? I don't know, but for David Culley to get that win in that manner, like, I'm almost ready to give him Coach of the Year. That was just unbelievable.
And I mean, it was glaring too, because the Jags looked so unprepared in so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, they had too many guys in the huddle. They had delays of game. Like, it looked like they had no idea. Like, the Texans were very professionally put together. Like, you know, as you said, David Culley was like a guy that no one expected to become a head coach. He's a coach who's been around the NFL forever, who nobody talked about. But he obviously knows how to run a team. Like, he is very clear that the Texans were prepared. Whereas the Jags, you know, there were reports prior to this game in multiple outlets that that experiment with Urban Meyer running a team of professionals, all dudes making, you know, real money, some of them making more money than him, that he is having trouble with that side of it, that he is not resonating with the players, that he is, you know, as we always say, losing the locker room in some ways. And it looked that way as you watch the Jaguars. Like, it just was not it was not a well thought out effort by them. I thought Trevor Lawrence had, like, you saw his arm on tape a couple times where you're just like, whoa, this, like, those throws are amazing. But he was not put in position. We were wondering after watching the preseason, like, so wait, are the Jags, are they holding back from what they're actually going to do, or is this their offense? And I think that might be their offense.
That's
really disappointing for those of us who wanted to see Trevor Lawrence
get
opportunity.
And I think with the Jaguars, it's like, you have Trevor Lawrence. And personally, like, I thought that Trevor Lawrence played a pretty damn good game. Like, I know the interceptions are bad, but I tend to look at it as a rookie. Like, are we seeing the things that we wanted to see from you that made you this pick in the first place? And I think with Trevor, like, there were so many throws where it's like the Jaguars haven't had anyone that can do something like this in such a long time. And it was just so promising. Like, the high, like, not only just like the fact that he was looking like a real quarterback, but just like the difficulty in some of these throws was just like, it kind of proved to me, like, wow, like, we were kind of all right in thinking that this is one of the best quarterback prospects we've ever seen. And once these interceptions get cleaned up, like, he's going to torch people. But it's just hard to feel good about where the Jaguars are organizationally. And honestly, like, I've talked to multiple people who root for the Jaguars this weekend, and all of them are like, yo, I hope Urban takes that USC job. And and the fact that we're here after one week, it's just unbelievable.
It's unbelievable, but also like sort of what all of us said, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, we're like, is this really going to work?
Yeah. And then there have been, you know, whispers, I guess, reports this weekend where it's like, you know, Urban kind of already tired of the NFL lifestyle. I'm like, dude, what did you think you were getting yourself into? I mean, it's not like Urban came and, you know, Bill Belichick retires and Urban takes over this team that's already built. Like, this is something Urban's never done, lose. And he's going to lose a lot. And that's just kind of like the nature of rebuilding the team. But when you read these reports and talk to people and he's getting pissed off after preseason losses and like really upset, you gotta like take a step back and get the whole picture here, dude. Like, it's a lot. Like, coaching the NFL is a lot, and you're gonna have to figure this out on your own without, you know, alienating people. And if he's not interested in doing that, then I guess he can head back to college.
Right. Speaking of teams that are going to lose a lot this year, the Carolina Panthers beat the New York Jets 19-14. This is a game where probably I don't know if either team felt good coming out of this one. I mean, I guess you could pretend Sam Darnold had an okay debut for the Panthers, but you know, I don't know. I didn't see anything that really proves anything more than what we thought he was. You know, that he was a guy who could do that. And then the Jets, Zach Wilson just got beat up, and now if Mekhi Becton, you know, a player that we love, if he's out, they're in just a world of trouble. So I'm not sure, you know, this is just two teams that are going to go through it this year, I think.
It was just the only thing I really feel good about after that game is Chris McCaffrey looked awesome. And that's kind of all I got, really. Sam Darnold, he had an okay debut. I mean, the pass to Robbie Anderson was nice, and I'm sure it had to feel good for those guys to get that touchdown. I mean, after the years that they spent in New York, they got that touchdown. But outside of that, like, it was just a lot of short stuff to Christian McCaffrey and some of the other guys. You know, there's a nice throw to DJ Moore down the sideline, but I don't really feel like they asked Sam to do all that much. And on the flip side, I actually thought Zach Wilson put together a nice game, but, you know, you're like, it's like trying to land a ship that's on fire or a plane that's on fire. There's not much going on. The offensive line was dreadful. Mekhi Becton got hurt. Receivers were dropping passes. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot going on. And I don't really have much to say about the Jets until they just start to look like a real team.
All right. Yeah. It was just the polar opposite of, you know, talking about the Eagles and Hurts, and they asked him to do what he could do. Like, Zach Wilson would have, they were just asking, he had to do everything, you know, like there was just so much he would have had to lift the Jets, and he almost did. But it's just not a good formula at this point.
Hold on. I got to step aside real quick. I've got like 2 seconds.
All right, let's jump to Niners-Lions. One of the situations where the first-round quarterback is not yet starting, the 49ers are sort of platooning, I guess, a little bit, working Trey Lance in here and there. What did you make from this game? You know, how good can the 49ers be? Is this how it's going to play out this season, where they're going to rotate Garoppolo and Trey Lance, or are we moving toward Lance being the guy?
I think they're going to rotate, honestly. And I think that Kyle Shanahan might be like one of the few guys in NFL history.
We let Shanahan get away with anything.
We do. We really do. But
Kyle Shanahan, he can do whatever.
I really do feel like he's going to be good enough to figure this out and get away with it to a degree. Because here's the difference, where when Justin Fields came in that game, and I think on the first drive against the Rams, you know, they just kind of did some weird play, like where they got down to the red zone and Justin Fields came in and he just threw like a pass, like not even a play action pass or RPO read option fake, zone read fake, like just a normal pass. And it didn't really make much sense. But then when Trey Lance comes in, Jesus Christ. And then when Trey Lance comes in, and they're down like on the 5 or 6 yard line against the Lions, there's a plan for him. You know, there's a, it's a, like a zone read fake. And then, you know, you get your options to pass after that. And to me, the difference there where you see the clarity and what they want these guys to do when they come and get their first snaps in the NFL kind of gave me more faith that Kyle Shanahan is going to be the guy to figure this out and have, you know, Trey Lance puts in positions to succeed, even if he's not going to be starting every week. And I personally am pretty against the idea of like rotating your quarterbacks in all throughout the season. But, you know, this guy has probably earned enough faith from us for him to be able to figure this out. And I mean, dude, they score 41 points, and the packages in which Trey Lance came in, like they're not breaking up the court, like the flow of the offense, the rhythm of the offense whatsoever. I mean, it was just
right.
Honestly, I know the Lions are rebuilding and just kind of in the dumps, but I thought that was a really masterful performance by the whole 49ers offense.
Right. And I feel like they kind of turned it off at halftime. They had a commanding lead and it seemed like they eased off. I'm not sure how much Shanahan really showed of what he wants to do in the second half, and the Lions sort of came charging back. I think we all figured the Lions would play hard and never give up, because their coach will probably bite their kneecaps off if they don't. that is exactly what happened. Jared Goff was like awful when it mattered early in the game, and then when it was like hero ball time, he looked okay, which is a very Jared Goff way to go to approach things, I guess. And you know, I mean, this is just another team that expect nothing out of this team, as far as I'm concerned, and that's sort of where they're at. There's nothing really to take from this.
Yeah, they stink. Just, but hey, they're gonna try hard, so whatever.
Yeah, and that's what they get for the coach they hired. You know, that's what they bought. Let's talk about the Steelers and Bills. This is probably a surprising one for people. The Steelers win 23-16. Just like such a typical Steeler, like Mike Tomlin Steelers. Like, it feels like this is obviously he would love to have Ben Roethlisberger still be good, right, and still be able to throw the ball all around the field and have an exciting offense. But since that's not the case, like just sort of grinding teams down with a defense that is just going to put relentless pressure on opposing teams and letting Roethlisberger like make a play here or there seems like their formula, and it worked in week one.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Roethlisberger was just abysmal in this game, but hey, right. You got the quarterback.
That's just sort of who he is.
Yeah,
now, right?
He's just not a good quarterback. I mean, honestly, I don't think Josh Allen played quite as bad as maybe the numbers show in this game, but I think the Bills, like, they might just be in this area like where you just have this one team that you just can't get past. Like, even if on paper everything looks better in favor of the Bills, like, you just kind of struggle for whatever reason. And I wouldn't like put this loss on Josh Allen. I think that maybe this is a situation where you kind of got unlucky, and you know, they had a lot of penalty yards too. They had 8 penalties for 81 yards, which just, it's going to be tough to win with that too. And you know, they weren't quite as explosive as they were last year, just throughout the whole game. So I don't know if this is a situation where you struggle with Pittsburgh in general, because last year they kind of got the clamps put on them by Pittsburgh's defense too. And to be fair, like, this is a defense that is loaded with talent, like from, you know, the middle of the defense, crazy talent. I mean, you're talking about Cam Hayward, Stephon Tua, TJ Watt's back, Minka Fitzpatrick patrolling in the back, Devin Bush, like down the middle of the Steelers defense. I'm not sure that there's a better unit in the league. You're just kind of, you got to figure out how to attack those corners and figure that out. And maybe Buffalo is just not quite there yet. But, you know, I don't think that Pittsburgh is a better team than Buffalo on a whole. It's just kind of a good matchup for them, I guess.
Right. I mean, it's a defense that can get pressure, and I should have looked up the blitz numbers, but I feel like they probably weren't blitzing that much and still got pressure on Josh Allen, you know, and like that's the recipe, right? Like if you can have guys in coverage and still move a quarterback, then like that's That's the number one thing a defense wants to do. And like you said, the Steelers appear to be in a better position than pretty much any other team to do that and have the dudes in place to make that happen. Seahawks, Colts, the Carson Wentz, era in Indianapolis is off to maybe a rocky start. You and I were talking before the show, like this, there's a lot of people in Indy saying, let's not blame Carson Wentz. Things around him fell apart. The offensive line wasn't as good as it needs to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can tell you that that's the same stuff that was said a lot in Philadelphia. There just seems to be something about Carson Wentz that, like, people are hesitant to blame him when the team around him does not function. Whereas most of the time we look at a quarterback and say, well, his team didn't get it done. Like, that's it, probably a lot of it on the quarterback. And I think it was, I mean, from what I saw this game, it was the same Carson Wentz issues. The Seahawks won 28-16. Russell Wilson was Russ. Like, they have a new offense that they're doing things a little bit differently. It seemed to work out. But, you know, I think really the story here is just the Colts. Like, I'm not, you know, Carson Wentz, this is who he is. Like, he's a guy who's going to try to make plays, and he gets himself in trouble so much. And he does not, like, if the offensive line is not perfect for him, he gets moving and he tries to make his own thing happen, and it's not good. And I think we saw that.
Yeah. I mean, he looked better than he did last year. I'll give him that. But I mean, that was such a low bar to set, you know. he didn't look like the worst quarterback to ever play football. So that's a positive step in the right direction for Wentz. But the thing to me is, like, when you just look at how these two teams or these two quarterbacks played, it's like, oh, okay, that's how far the Colts have to go to get an elite quarterback or someone that could take down someone like Russell Wilson. I mean, they're just so far behind, I think, on what this offense needs to be. And that's just quarterback play. Like, I know that maybe Carson Wentz is dinged up and still healing from that foot injury, and that's why he's struggling. But when you just look at how far apart Russell Wilson and Carson Wentz are, I don't know what you're supposed to think if you're a Colts fan. Like, this team is not really good enough to go anywhere. And you saw the gap in quarterback talent that's going to keep you from getting where you need to go. It's just you kind of settled for this potential reclamation project when I think you should be asking yourself, how good was this project to begin with? Because I know that Wentz had the 2017 season, but if you go back and you talk to people who are really, like, heavy in the football data and stuff, they're like, hey, you know, it's kind of buyers beware, because a lot of that happened on third and long and third down, and those stats tend to not be very stable from year to year. Like, I don't know anyone that was projecting Wentz to have the season that he did last year, where, you know, it just didn't look like he really even belonged on the NFL. But, you know, I think it's fair to question if this guy really even has a ceiling that's all that high, especially after all of the injuries that he suffered in his career.
Yeah. Colts are waiting to get Eric Fisher back. I don't know how much that really helps their offensive line. It's probably a little bit, but as we've said, like, the reclamation project with Carson Wentz is, like, even the best Carson Wentz is not anywhere near as efficient as Philip Rivers was. He's more dynamic, but so often that ends up not being a good thing for Carson Wentz's football team, because he's just as liable to make a bad decision as a good one. Let's talk about the Chargers and the football team, man. Justin Herbert, he's good. He is good at football.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, the third down stats were just unreal. Right. Utterly insane. And I think that if you're a Chargers fan, like, it's got to feel so good to have a quarterback who can just put it on his shoulders and go get you a dub, like, when you need to. He was exceptional. The defense did some cool things in the Brandon Staley. And, not the toughest opponent in terms of offenses, where you got, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Taylor Heineke. But, Justin Fields did what you wanted him to do. He looked like a franchise quarterback, and not just franchise quarterback. Like, because when I think about franchise quarterback, I kind of think, like, someone that's worth handing out a second contract. But he kind of looks like someone who has the potential to go beyond that. Like one of these guys where, you know, they can, they have this, the shoulder width, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, and to put the team on their back and go get this thing done. And I just love watching him play because, you know, it's just the physicality with the ball just zips out of his hand. So much power behind it. And the sky is just like, the sky is the floor. Like when it comes to how you're talking about how good this kid can be. And, you know, if you're talking about year two, you're putting up a performance where I think he went like 13 of 16 on third down with 11 first downs or 10 first downs in that range. Like that is rare air status. And obviously, like I just said, it's not, you know, I said about Wentz where you're not going to be, you know, doing these things year to year, but just in a one game sample for a young quarterback, that's really, really exciting stuff to see.
Okay, let's go back to the Thursday night game. I think that's the last game. I think we got to all of them. But the Cowboys Bucks, we were looking ahead to that one. You know, the Bucks like didn't change. It's basically the same team as last year, and they played like it. Probably the big thing that we were wondering about was Dak Prescott. I thought Dak looked a little shaky, quite frankly, it looked like he couldn't throw the ball early in the game. But then he was Dak. I mean, he was making all the right decisions. He was finding a way, even though he didn't seem to have his fastball, quote unquote, he was finding a way to complete passes. He was just really good. I mean, he was the guy that we always talk about.
I thought that at first he kind of looked shaky. Like the ball was not coming out his hand in the speed that we're used to. But he kind of settled in, and I thought maybe he got more comfortable throwing the ball down the field as the game progressed. And you know, the accuracy, the command, the poise of the offense, like he looked so good, especially for a guy like the last time we saw him, his leg was in two pieces. And then all we heard all offseason was that he can't throw the ball because his shoulder hurts, or all training camp, I should say. So, you know, for him to come out and just look like that and take that game over at times when the Cowboys needed, great stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, Brady played a hell of a game too. So, I mean, Tampa Bay looks like the team to beat, and they get a tune-up game against the Falcons next week. So I'm sure that'll be fun.
Boy. Can't wait. All right, let's close the show out by taking one performance, one game, and throwing it out. Which team do you think that whatever we saw in week one is just nothing close to what they actually are?
I guess it's going to sound haterish, but the Eagles, like, I'm not convinced that
of course,
was real for them. Like, I'm happy for Jalen Hurts that he was able to put up that stat line, but, you know, so much of it was just, you know, yards after the catch stuff. And I know, like, I think he did a good job, you know, running the ball and being like a primary ball handler for the Eagles offense, but I just want to see them do it against a team that's not going to miss a million tackles and leave guys running wide open down the field. So, you know, we'll see what happens there.
I'm going to go with the Packers. I feel like we obviously know that Aaron Rodgers is going to be better. I do think there's probably a learning curve. Like Mike Pettine is, you know, running a defense from 15 years ago, and Joe Barry is trying to implement, you know, some pretty complicated stuff. We wrote a lot about it last year, what Brandon Staley is asking his defense to do. Joe Barry is trying to bring that and build it and figure out his personnel. You know, I think that's going to get better as the season goes on, and that will be a team that we're talking about in November, December as a potential Super Bowl team. What about which one are you taking and saying like, wait a minute, this is really who that team is, and I was wrong? Is there any team that you like, oh, wait a minute, this group is in trouble?
I guess the Jaguars look worse than I thought they would, because I think maybe part of it goes into how bad I thought the Texans were going to be, but like the fact that you weren't competitive against that Houston squad, like I don't think that this is going to be a team that's good throughout the season. And just kind of crazy that you had really no shot to be in the same ballpark as them the entire game. I just find it hard to believe that this team, even with Trevor Lawrence, like has a chance to be, you know, all that competitive. Because when you look at the rest of the AFC South, like, you know, this is a chance for the Jaguars to like do something kind of surprising here. And
right,
and maybe, I don't know if win the division is the right term, but, you know, be competitive for that top spot. And they just weren't close at all against what we all perceive to be the worst team in the league. So that team really surprised me in a bad way. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to have like an incredible rookie season, but they might be bad enough and unorganized enough to the point where it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the Titans sticking in the AFC South. You know, I think we've like thought of this team as potentially falling off a cliff for a long time, right? Because they were built around a running back, and that's what happens with running backs. You know, I'm not saying Derrick Henry's going to be much worse, but that there's something about the equation right now that is not working, you know, with Todd Downing calling plays and, you know, talked about them propping up Tannehill, and it just seems like this Arizona team should not have been able to do this to Tennessee, and they did. And it just feels like, you know, they lost Dean Pease. I guess that was what, last year they didn't have him, but I'm not sure that the defense ever really caught up to where it needed to be. And so they're not going to be able to have that to carry them through any rough patches with the offense. So it really feels like it could be a down year for them too. And in that division now, it's just totally up in the air.
Who knows? Maybe the Texans will come out the ashes and win this game.
That would be such an amazing
story. Honestly, I would absolutely love it at this point. So I hope they do it.
Yeah. I mean, people, you were around Baltimore when Tyrod was Joe Flacco's backup.
Yeah.
Like, everyone just wanted Tyrod Taylor to go and have the opportunity to play some.
Yeah. He's got a roof for, you know?
Right. He's a fun player. He's a good guy.
And he's just gone through a lot of bullshit. Like, the getting your lung collapse before a game, and then, Justin Herbert's good, so you're not going to play. A couple years before that, you're with Cleveland, and you're just kind of keeping the seat warm for Baker Mayfield. Like, I'm glad that he's finally got a chance to play, because I think it's a safe bet to say that the other guy won't be taking his spot anytime soon.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's week one, man. It's in the books. We're going to look ahead to week two later in the week. I don't know when we'll record, but we will. We'll figure out some things to say about what's coming next. Thanks for joining us. Find us on Twitter. You can tell us how bad our opinions are there. He's at Forverts. I'm at Chris Corman. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks.
If you have any real complaints, you can send them to at the Stephen Ruiz on Twitter.
Make sure it's the Stephen Ruiz. Accept no imposters. Just the Stephen Ruiz. All right. Talk to you guys next time.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.